Support for this KQED podcast comes from Walmart Labs, based in Silicon Valley. Powered by its own open source technology, Walmart Labs engineers code in an agile DevOps environment. Learn more about engineering and big data positions at walmartlabs.com.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Rachel Miro, and we're talking about an expose of the Academy of Art by Forbes reporter Katya Savchuk, who joins us in studio. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
In a series of articles, you argue the Academy ignores a lot of local and federal laws. We're going to dig into that momentarily, but I also want to introduce Sue Rowley, who's Executive Vice President for Educational Services at the Academy of Art University. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, Katya, why don't you just tell us, first of all, what interested you in the Academy of Art? Why did you think, hey, maybe I should dig into this company a little bit more?
Sure. Well, our office is in San Francisco, is just a couple blocks from Academy of Art headquarters. So like many San Franciscans, we encounter red banners all over the city, the shuttles driving by. I also grew up in San Francisco, so was familiar with the name. And a colleague of mine, Ryan Mack, said, you know, you should look into this. And I'd seen some rumors and heard that, you know, the owners are very wealthy, but no one had seemed to really dig into it.
And I was surprised reading your article to learn that the Academy is a major landholder in this very expensive city, more than 40 properties.
That's right. I was very surprised to find that as well. And a lot of those properties, as I found, have planning code violations. So,
what kind of violations?
Most of the violations have to do with illegally converting properties without having the right permits. So turning an office building, for example, into classrooms, or apartment buildings, in some cases rent-controlled housing, into student dorms without having the right entitlements. So that's right. Outraged some residents and some city officials.
Is that just a matter of, you know, playing devil's advocate here, you know, taking shortcuts? I mean, it's a university, so it's going to buy a property and want to turn it into classroom space, you know?
Right. But what I've heard from planning officials who've been up close and personal with the process for about the last decade is that this is really an exceptional case. One of the current planning commissioners said that this is an example of lawlessness never before seen in a, you know, otherwise reasonably operating city. So it's definitely not the course of business for other institutions, especially on this scale. And it has to do in part, I think, with the rapid growth of the university and the need for space when they guarantee housing for first-year students.
Sue Rowley, is this a characterization you accept?
Well, I just want to say that today I think I'm speaking in behalf of all the artists and the aspiring artists that are part of this community, because the article I felt like was really biased. I met Katya at the spring show, and she had a chance to talk to students with portfolios. She saw our fashion show. And my sense is maybe she didn't understand what she was seeing. She was seeing top quality work, and that was not even mentioned in her article. I think the school is unique in the sense that we go back to kind of the beginning of people apprenticing with artists so that they could get a strong portfolio. We do the heavy lifting, and that makes us unique in the way we do our education. I can't speak to what's happening with the city and the building codes because my focus here is education, and that's what I want to focus on in the interview today.
Sue Rowley, I'm just wondering, after these articles that Katya Savchuk has published in Forbes, is there a discussion going on at the university about getting up to code ASAP?
No, but what is going on right now is I'm hearing from a lot of former students who just say they are so mad about this article that they feel that they've been the article made them sound like they were stupid or something. I've heard from faculty members saying, what's going on? Who is this person? She must not be an artist because she didn't speak to the work that she's seeing. We are very, very proud of the students that come to the school. We feel like the students are coming here, they're getting great jobs. I want to bring up something that I think is really important, too, and that is that LinkedIn actually said we were one of the best schools in the world at launching students into jobs. And I think that's really, you know, an objective criteria. They went through millions and millions of portfolios, and they said that school is doing what they all schools should be doing. And this was never even mentioned in the article.
Let me stop you there, Sue. Just a question here. If you don't post your graduation rates, if you don't post your job placement rates, what are we to make of LinkedIn's endorsement? You know what I'm saying? Like, you need numbers regardless of various companies saying, doing a good job.
Well, and that's true. And I know that everybody's looking at what are the numbers? What are the numbers? We have not been given the criteria that all schools will abide by those numbers.
But other schools are posting those numbers, so they seem to be clear on the criteria.
I'm not so sure that's true. And what I'm reading is that a lot of schools have posted numbers, and then the people have come back and said those numbers are questionable. We have not been given the criteria for it. We have lots of alumni success stories. We can point to, I know in the article, Katya went into talking about a couple students who hadn't done as well as they'd hoped. Every school has that. You have, if you want to look at Harvard, if you want to look at Yale, if you want to look at Berkeley, you can say, what about those psychology students? What about those philosophy students? What about those students who went through biology, but they're working in
that said, let's keep the focus, though, on the Academy of Art. And I'll just say, like, federally backed loans require at this point, thanks to the Obama administration, some measure of how those students are doing after they graduate.
Right, and I
for the for profits,
yeah, and I can tell you that most of our students are doing very well. I hear it from individual students at graduation, in the hallway. They'll say, "Amazingly enough, I already got the job of my dreams." So, what I'm trying to tell you is, I don't want to go into specific numbers right now because I want to use the criteria that the administration gives us. And we haven't gotten that at this point in time.
I just want to throw out our phone number to listeners who might be attending the Academy now or used to attend it or just curious about this topic. 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email us at forum@kqed.org. And if you head to the website, you will find Katya's article posted there, or at least a link, so you can sort of check out what we're talking about. That's kqed.org/forum. You can also add your comments and questions online. So, Katya Savchuk, you've been listening to a lot of stuff here. I don't suggest a point-by-point return, but why is it important to know the graduation rates and the job placement rates?
So just to be clear, the graduation rates we do know, and we know that they are low. They are 32% for undergraduates within 6 years. And when you look at online-only students, that drops to 6% and 3% for part-time students. And those are not a small minority of students. 35% are online students and 41% are part-time students. So we're talking a lot of students and very low graduation rates.
And, you know, how does it compare to other for-profit institutions? How does it compare to institutions in general?
When you look at selective art schools, of course, the rates are much higher, you know, in the 90%. Some more mid-range schools are closer to 60%. And, you know, we didn't look at the whole sector. We looked at what's going on at AU and what are these federal loans paying for. And on the issue of job placement rates, I do want to say that I did hear from AU, as Sue said, that they don't feel they have to disclose the rates until the Department of Education comes up with a formula. I talked to the Department of Education, and they said that if a school voluntarily collects those rates, they do have to publish them under federal rules. And AU told me that they do voluntarily collect those rates. So Healed and Corinthian Colleges, everyone heard a lot about that. They, in fact, also weren't required to collect them by their accreditor, but they did have to disclose them because they voluntarily collected them.
And then they got in trouble for it.
And then they got in trouble for misrepresenting them.
Well, if that's the case, then were they being penalized for making an effort? I mean, maybe it's a smart idea to sort of lay low on those particular numbers if the Obama administration is going to come after you because they don't like the way you calculated it, or you think they think the university is being misleading in order to, you know, nag more naive enrollees.
Certainly, it might be convenient, but based on what the Department of Education told me, it's against federal rules. You have to publish your rates and the methodology used if you choose to collect those numbers.
So, Sue Rowley, is the Academy collecting those numbers, or is it just waiting?
Well, we're waiting right now. What we're doing is we're trying to talk to alumni as much as we can, because for us, and let me just stress again, we are really about portfolios. We want our students to leave here with a strong portfolio, and so they can get a job when they get out. That's key for everything that we do. Now, does everybody get a job? I can't tell you exactly what that percentage is, but I can tell you we're talking to alumni about the kinds of jobs they're getting. We're talking to people who hire our students about what they are requiring in the portfolios. We're doing everything we can. Even the fashion show, Katya, that you went to, you saw all the people who were there who were talking to students about possible jobs. You saw the work that they do. It's all about our students being employed. That is actually what makes us unique. That's why we're the largest art school in the United States, because we aren't afraid to talk about students working when they have a degree in art and design.
Let me pose, Katya, a slightly different question. I grew up in a family of artists. A career in the arts has always been a risky proposition, no matter what an art school tells you. Why shouldn't we think of this as a case of buyer beware?
Sure. Well, I think it comes down to what students are promised when they enroll. And AU promises students that anyone can become an artist, that anyone can afford to go to a private art school, and that they will make them a professional artist, and that they can take federal loans, you know, taxpayer dollars, to fund it. And they don't require an art portfolio to get in. It's great to give people an opportunity, but there's a big mismatch for a lot of students, I found, between what they think they'll be able to achieve and the result, which for many is a lot of debt and not a job in the field that they wanted to go into.
But there again, I mean, when you think about it, right, whether it's changing tastes in music or fashion or changing technologies or a mismatch between a person's perception of their talent and the actual reality, there's a lot of reasons why a person might not succeed in the arts.
Sure. Our art has always been hard, but when you hear about some recruiters I talked to who recently worked for AU, they're calling, for example, I was told, an unemployed mother of four on welfare in Oklahoma, and saying, you know, this is a good investment and you will succeed as an artist. And they told me that felt... That didn't.
So you're saying there's aggressive recruiting going on.
Yes, and that they felt that they knew that person was going to drop out in 4 weeks. You know, someone who didn't have a computer, that they said, you know, you can afford to do an online program and you will succeed. So it's the mismatch often between what's on the brochures and the promise that's delivered.
Sue Rowley?
Yes, I can't wait to respond to that.
Sure. Yes.
So first of all, let me just say, we're a little different than some schools in that we don't cherry pick the people who are going to come into the school. We know that a lot of people have not had an opportunity to take professional art and design classes. They come to us, they have a dream. I don't want to have a cliche, but they do have a dream. They say, and I've heard it over and over and over, I've always wanted to do this thing. What we do is we will go wherever they are. We meet them halfway, and we will try to take them all the way into being a professional artist. Now, having said that, if a recruiter was overly aggressive, if a recruiter, and she said former employee, I don't know if that person may have been fired or is no longer works here for a reason, there are a lot of people who want to come to school. We don't want people to come here who don't have a chance at success. But most people, we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know who's going to be that person. This education, this art and design is going to light the spark. They're going to become the next Monet. They're going to become the next person that changes the way all of us look at art and design. So we don't try to predict. We try to assist. We try to give them what they need so that they can achieve their goals, so they can achieve their dreams. And we see it happening over and over and over. I hear parents saying to me constantly, you know, my son or daughter didn't do that great in high school, but they came to the Academy of Art and now they've just blossomed. That's the kind of success story we hear. That's what fuels us. That's what keeps us going. And we have tons of support services as well. We tutor students. We give workshops outside of class. We do everything we can to accommodate these people.
Well, we're getting a lot of great calls and comments, so I'm going to get into that right now. Max writes, if the Academy of Art stands by their success, why won't they give journalists the data they're asking for? It's simple. Prove them wrong or don't. Jerry writes, I feel the Forbes article is very one-sided and does not speak to any of the positive effects AAU and Dr. Stevens have had on the San Francisco community. I work for a 50-year nonprofit in the Mission that serves low-income, frail elderly with housing and wellness programs. Over the years, Dr. Stevens and her staff and students have contributed a great deal of in-kind professional graphic, art, design, and architectural expertise to our small nonprofit. He goes on, but I want to get more calls in here. Let's talk now to Cynthia in Albany.
Hi.
Hi. You want to tell your story?
Yeah. I went to the Academy of Art, and I was misled about the accreditation. I was there for 2 years. I was a very good student, made straight A's. I went on to be very successful, but I lost my 2 years of schooling when I found out that the Academy of Art was not accredited.
Is that true, Sue Rowley? Is the Academy not accredited?
No, we have actually, we're over-regulated in a lot of ways. We're WASC accredited. That's the regional accreditation. We're NASSAD accredited. That's a National School of Art and Design. We have specialized accreditation as well. Of course, we have to get the blessing of Department of Education. So we have every accreditation imaginable. And we're in full compliance with all of these groups.
And I lost 2 years of schooling. I was advised to transfer, a joint transfer, where I went to the Academy of Art and USF at the same time. My credits would not transfer into the UC system. And when I started at USF, I lost all of my credits. And I did graduate from the Academy of Art and USF, and I transferred to Cal to go to UC Berkeley, and I got a Master's of Fine Art. I was also awarded attendance at Skowhegan, and I was very...
All right, Cynthia, we have to keep charging because we have just about 10 minutes left in the show. But that said, let me just take this question back to Sue Rowley. I guess it sounds like Cynthia did not realize that her work at the Academy would not transfer to the UC system.
Well, it should... So I would have to look at her transcript. I can't speak
it's
to
hard to individ- speak, yeah.
Right, but what I would say is, you know, if you're going from one area to another, it's up to each school to decide what they want to accept. In our case, for example, people transfer here, we want to see the portfolios. So I don't know what their criteria was. I don't know why she ran into that problem. I don't know when it was that she did this, but I would, you know, be glad to maybe talk to her at another time offline and try to figure out what happened there.
Figure out what happened. Well, Cynthia, thank you for that question. I have another one for you, Sue Rowley. Can you tell us how much it costs to get a degree at the Academy?
Well, that's a that depends on how many credits you're taking, what length of program you're taking. We have a class runs between $2,000 and $3,000. So it depends on the length of your degree. If you're in a graduate program, we have the MFA programs, which is a terminal degree. That's 63 units. We have we're in the process actually of getting some shorter programs in the MAs. That will be 36 units. We've got associate degree programs. And then, of course, Bachelor of Fine Arts and what we call our second degree programs. So we have a lot of different kinds of programs for cost. But I can tell you this, that we're half the cost of most of the art schools out there. I think RISD is over $44,000 a year. I think UC Berkeley out of state is $35,000. And if you want just the general figure from us, we're at about $22,000.
Okay, let's charge through a few more comments here. Nick says, I've worked in the games industry in San Francisco and Palo Alto as an art director for over 10 years. I've personally hired half a dozen Academy grads and worked with over a dozen more. And I've found the artist to be well-trained and prepared to fit smoothly into a competitive, demanding work environment. Another listener writes, "Thank you, Forbes, for this excellent article. Please discuss how the taxpayers are paying via loans a large number of students and the very high debt rate of students and the very low graduation rates." Let me sort of twist this question for you, Katya Savchuk, and ask, you know, you talk to people at the federal level, you talk to people at the local level. If these violations are so egregious that you outlined in these Forbes articles, why aren't those regulators cracking down?
Well, they are. Just to briefly answer the reader's question, about 55% of students last year had loans, and they averaged about $7,000 per year. The school is facing some scrutiny. It's facing scrutiny from its accreditor, WASC, which issued a formal notice of concern last year, largely because of the low graduation rate, and scheduled a special visit to review progress next year. Also, the for-profit industry in general is facing tough new rules that went into effect in July, and we won't know the results until a few years pass, but based on informational data, at least 13 of AAU's programs might not meet those new standards.
Let's head to the phones now. We've got Marcus in San Francisco.
Hi there. I'm a merchant in the Hayes Valley District, and I found that because we're so close to the academy, we get a lot of students, either students or graduates, and the level of preparedness for the job market is very, very, it's a wide spectrum. I have kids who come in with flimsy resumes who don't really know how to prepare themselves for a job. And then I have people who come out and they're gung-ho and they're really ready to tackle things. And it just seems to me that there's no consistency in the sort of students that get put through the college.
Thank you so much, Marcus. We're going to plow through to the next phone call. David in Nevada.
Hi. I'm just calling to say that there was a comment about how the school doesn't have a crystal ball to find out who's going to work at the school and who's not, who's going to have success. And I think that's the problem with the academy, is that it will accept anybody. And the thing is that all artists do have a crystal ball that they deliver to you, and it's their portfolio. And I think that there's a lot of students at the academy that just aren't prepared for the life that you need to have to be a successful artist in the creative industry. It's a lot of work. And some of these people are like, well, I saw a commercial on MTV, and I thought, hey, a career on art, that sounds great. I'll do that. And they're just not really prepared, and they end up spending too much money, and they kind of get, taken advantage of, I think.
Now, David, you went to the Academy of Art?
Yes, I did. And I graduated, and I've worked for 15 years in the industry that I was after. And it's one of those things where, I mean, that what I said about the commercial on TV is something that did happen to me. I remember I worked really hard in high school to figure out which art school I was going to go to. And even my art teacher in high school was like, oh, don't worry, if you have a check, they're going to accept you. I was worried about my portfolio and all that.
Well, it sounds like it worked out positively for you.
Well, it did, but I went into it knowing what I needed to do. And that's the thing about the academy, is that with any art school, you're going to be surrounded by a lot of great artists. The thing is, at the academy, you see other artists that you just kind of are like, wow, you know, you're really not going to make it, and you're spending a lot of money. It might be better if you spent that money elsewhere, and it's kind of a sad feeling that you have for some students. I mean, really, a career in art is not something that's really easy, and it's also something that you kind of have to have an aptitude for. And if you just accept anybody, you're going to accept somebody that can't draw at all and then put them into a program where they're going to be learning to draw for life.
That's a great point. Sue Rowley, why doesn't the Academy require some kind of portfolio?
Let me just say that a lot of people don't have access to classes in art and design. They do not have access to professional artists. So when they come to us, again, they've done some amateur things. Their parents, their grandparents, said you're going to be an artist someday. They took pictures at the wedding or the family reunion or whatever it is, but they aren't professionals. President Stevens asked me a long time ago to try to find out what is a common denominator for success at the Academy of Art. And I looked at everything. I looked at past grades. I looked at students who came here with some kind of portfolio. I looked at everything. And what it all boiled down to, Rachel, was it's passion, it's commitment, and it's focus. If the student can provide, if they're passionate, if they are going to do this thing, they're going to put in the extra hours it takes, just like that young man said, it takes time and practice. If they have the commitment, when they hit a speed bump, they're not going to give up. They're going to keep trying. They're going to go to those workshops. They're going to get tutoring. If they have focus, this is kind of a potpourri of art and design. And so what we want them to do is say, yes, I really want to do this thing. I want to do photography, or I want to do fashion design, and then focus on it, really give it everything they've got, then they will be successful. The students that get lost is if they don't have the commitment, if they think, oh, I want to go to art school in San Francisco and it's going to be a lot of fun. We have standards here, and we expect them to meet us halfway. Like I said, we're willing. It's not a sink or swim situation. We're willing to do anything we can to try to help them, but they have to give us that passion, commitment, and focus. If they
have
that, they'll be okay.
We have time for about one more comment here. Peter, who points out that he was an art major decades ago and had to submit a portfolio to get into the good schools, he said, which didn't happen. But he says the big problem, the big red flag about the Academy of Art and commonly accepted viewpoint in the Bay Area is that the AAU is seen as a real estate holding company with an art problem.
Yeah, and I just want to say, you know, I don't know where this has come from, because we are an art and design school, and we have facilities that help students pursue those areas of art and design. I think that's something that the press has done. It's interesting. You know, maybe people don't want to talk about why we're the largest art school. We're the largest art school because word of mouth. We're doing something other art schools aren't doing, and we're bringing success. We don't believe in the starving artist theory. We believe that if students come here and they give us 100%, they can be successful in art and design.
Time for just one last word, Katya Savchuk, just a couple seconds. Actually, it sounds like the music is coming up. So I'm going to thank Sue Rowley, Executive Vice President for Educational Services at the Academy of Art University, and Katya Savchuk, reporter for Forbes. Thank you so much for being with us today. You can read her article by going to our website, kqed.org/forum. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.